Yeah, man, let's do it.
All right, Joe, thanks for joining. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thanks all right, for having me. Yeah. So, all right, JP Aero, let's start there. What do you guys do? Tell me a little bit about the business. Who are you guys serving? And then we'll dive into some other things around your thoughts on some of these labor shortages, some other trends, and then we'll get into the podcast you're doing, some of the presentations you're working on, and then hire vets as well. But let's start with JP Aero.
All right. So JP Aero is a mobile aircraft maintenance support company. Primarily, we work on jets. We don't work pistons or anything smaller, even turboprops. We're really not doing a lot of turboprop work. But, you know, we service the 135 operators all throughout the nation. And we've been doing it now for 5 years out here in the Southeast. Basically, I've got some vans set up. They're set up to rock their mobile offices. They've got tools and all the equipment you need for a service check and basically anything you need to troubleshoot an airplane. And so we just get calls from these guys when they're down and they need some support. And we're that face to get them up and RTS'd safely and quickly as possible so that they can go back out and make some revenue. Right now we service about 19 customers on a regular basis.
Okay.
And, you know, we're reaching out to find more always. But, you know, if you look at the top 10 list of charter jet operators in the U.S., we service every single one of them. So I'm not going to name their names. I don't know how they feel about that, but we fix every single one of them. And, you know, we just have a really good process. This is all we do. We don't do heavy maintenance. We don't do scheduled maintenance. We don't do, I mean, we'll come and support your scheduled maintenance for sure. But, you know, we don't have a hangar or anything like that. This is my office, and literally it's a 10 by 13. It's got two desks in here for me and my executive assistant, and I'm barely here. So usually we're on the road fixing jets. But yeah, man, that's what we do. We're primarily jet mechanics, just running out and fixing them.
What's the nature of these calls? Like when they come in, what's the urgency? What are the type of requests? What's the type of maintenance that you guys are doing? I'm sure it's all over the place, but like what's kind of the general feel?
You know, really it's, you know, a 135 operator has really stringent policies they got to follow, really stringent regulations that they've got to follow and adhere to. And so, you know, if you've got an out light bulb, we're getting called for it. If you got a bad tire, we're getting called for it. If you got an engine oil leak, we're coming out for it. You know, hydraulic leaks. And so it's really a wide spectrum of support that we provide. And, you know, if it's something that we cannot support, I usually just refer you to a company that can, you know, because you might need some heavy maintenance done. And that's not going to happen on the ramp. But we do as much as we can, and we're pretty resourceful. We've got really good connections all throughout the Southeast, with different FBOs and different maintainers, different operations, and we're able to find support, whether we can do it personally or not. I'd rather, the customer get help, even if it's not us. If I have a vetted vendor that, you know, has a good reputation and does stuff the way that we do it, we usually just refer you over to that guy, you know, cause they might have a shop on that airfield. So.
Sure. Well, why do you have that? Why do you take that approach? I mean, it might be obvious to you, but like, it's not necessarily obvious that you would want to, that you would send business to a potential, you know, quote competitor, but like, why take that approach?
You know, it's funny because a lot of people would be like, I'll never do that, you know? But my main goal is not to, I mean, obviously I own a business. I'm trying to make money. Right. But my main goal is customer service, to make sure that my customer is taken care of. And so if I can't do it, I'm not going to sit here and ruin my reputation over sitting out on an airplane for 5 days, 6 days, trying to learn a system that I don't know, or have my team learn a system. And when I can send them right down the street to somebody who can save them a ton of money, get them back up. Maybe being a business owner, I understand the cost of stuff. And so like, just understanding that if that airplane's not flying, it's not making revenue, which means there are probably 100 to 200 people sitting at an airfield waiting for revenue to come in so that they can get their paycheck. Right. So my main goal is to help the customer get what they need so that they can go and make revenue so they can be a successful business. I could care less of my reputation or the money that comes in. Eventually, you know, the money will come, right? We have plenty of jobs. We have plenty of good revenue coming in to the company. And so I think that me holding that on is just an ego problem. And so, you know, if I can push that out and get my customer taken care of first, not only is that a good look for my company, but that's a great win for my customer. So,
and how many guys are working for you now?
Right now we have 4 technicians working for me. I've got an executive assistant and a CFO.
So how do you take that philosophy that you have? How do you work with the team? How do you kind of instill that? How do you do that when you're not there, basically?
Training, man.
Yeah.
Training, dude. You know, not only that, I'm very specific on the people that I hire. There's a book. I can't remember the name of the book. Sorry, I'm having a brain fart. But they talk about putting the right people on the bus.
Oh, Good to Great, the Jim Collins book?
Yeah, Good to Great, okay. By Jim Collins. All right. So putting the right people on the bus and then getting the bus moving where you want it to go. Figure out where the bus is going to go after that. So I'm very, very cognizant of who I'm hiring. There is a big vetting process. Everybody that comes on here is a 1099 for 3 months at a minimum before I decide to bring them on full time. And during that time, I am monitoring their values, the way that they treat my customers, how quickly are they able to adapt, how's their attitude when they're working on the aircraft. And when that all comes into play after they do become a full hire, you know, I know I've got a really good, solid individual that I can bring up in the company. And so this company's not for everybody, you know, like, and I have no problem with that. Like, that's just the truth. We are customer based. Customer experience is key for me, making sure that my customers are updated in a timely manner and making sure that their aircraft is up and running as soon as possible is key for us.
Why focus on the customer that way?
We're all customers of something.
Yeah.
You know? And true. We all rate our last great experience. Perfect example. You go somewhere to get some fast food. You're sitting in line. You're waiting for the food to come out. And you're like, man, if I was at Chick-fil-A, I'd already have my food and I'd be driving on. Right. And so it's that customer experience that brings my customers back to us. And so I know how I want to be treated as a customer when I go to any store or buy any product. And so I'm just trying to create that space for my customer in this field.
And I'm not trying to ask these questions for like the simplicity's sake, but it's, you know, it almost seems like something that's obvious to you of like, hey, it's just obvious to treat the customer well. Like you thought through that there, but it doesn't seem to be the experience that most people get. You know, aviation for sure, but also just in the, you know, the general population, a lot of people talk about how customer service is kind of taken. It's like, you know, it's in the tank right now. And so I wanted to ask you, what are you seeing in terms of trends in aviation, at least in your portion of the industry, in terms of finding good technicians, people willing to work? Because it's all over the place, right? Like some people, like everybody's lazy. The technician shortage is here. There's nothing you can do. And basically, like you just have to accept that everything is going to be on fire. And I've got, you know, 2 little kids, and I'm not just laying down and accepting that we just have to deal with the terrible future because somebody's dead. You know, like it's just like screw that. I want to find a path forward. So, just curious to understand what are you seeing out there?
So, I think you're right on all those. Right, there's opinions out on, oh, you know, people are, this is just the way it is. But as an entrepreneur, I have a way to shift that culture, right? And as a person working in a field, if you're a mechanic and you're working at a place that the culture is terrible, you have a decision to make, not whether you're going to work there or not, but are you going to shift the culture? Are you going to be that person to drive the culture and the change? You know, seeing the trends of techs, it is difficult right now to find good techs. Most of the guys that are hired have great jobs. They have really good paying jobs. It's a money driven industry, obviously. You don't come into aviation maintenance hoping to not thrive, right? In some type of way. But as the culture changes, and as you know, a lot of people are talking a lot about the Gen Z and the newer generation coming into the business, and I think there's just a different way to approach it. In all honesty, you just have to find your approach. So a lot of these kids are, you have the instant knowledge at your fingertips with your phone. There's instant gratification in these spaces, and there's, I think, a lack of patience. And so if you can train people in a way that builds their patience and builds their, we were talking about it earlier, their resilience, and self-confidence, and actually show people you care to a point, right? There's a point where it's got to stop, you know, like, you know, not giving out awards for doing nothing. Right. And stuff like that. Like, you've actually got to earn your place here. And my team, man, we have meetings every week. And I'm like, remember, the entire company relies on you. You know what I'm saying? Like, this guy's paycheck relies on you doing your job right. You know, we had a simple conversation yesterday about closing out work orders, you know, and that training was basically, what's the importance of closing out a work order? You know, well, first of all, you've got to close out a work order because there's FAA regulations that stand there and say, if you don't have it documented, then it's undocumented maintenance. Secondly, nobody's going to get paid unless that work order is closed out and the invoice goes out. And I can't send out the invoice until the work order is closed, which means you're taking money out of this guy's pocket. And so I think the different approach is like, what we're seeing with these guys is they want to know why. Why am I doing this? If you can explain why you do it, most of the time they'll jump right on board and understand, because now they have a complete understanding of why I've got to do this. It's not just go do this because that's your job and I'm your boss, right?
Because I said so.
Right, because I said so. And we have conversations about this type of stuff. If you see that there's a way, you know, I'm a big believer in continuous improvement. And so if you see a way that it works better and you can explain to me how that'll work better than this, well, maybe we'll try it out. You know what I'm saying? But over the past 20 years, this is my experience, and that's why I've built the systems that we have. And so I'll explain to you exactly why we do it. And it all comes back to customer service and making sure that the customer has a great experience. That's our main, like one of our main goals here, is to make sure that the customer's happy with the product. And a lot of customers, you know, they might not like the price at the end of the job, but their aircraft is up and they're making revenue. And so I have to go back there and, you know, it's a gray area that we have to deal with, you know, as aviation maintenance. But the other trends that I'm seeing in this field is, like, you know, there's a lot of disgruntled employees that have just worked and worked and worked. And, you know, I think that part of the reason is they don't understand the why of why they do things that they do.
Why do you think that is the underlying reason?
Because you don't have purpose. You know, a life without purpose is meaningless, right? We spend most of our time at work. It doesn't matter what industry you're in.
Yeah.
You know, you wake up, you kiss your kids and get them off to school, and then you're at work until the sun goes down most of the time for most people, especially now with our economy. Some people are working 2-3 jobs just to make ends meet. You're at work all the time. And if you're just at work grinding, and the only purpose is to make money, you know, you'll turn around and look back and you'll see 40, 50 years pass by and you've accomplished nothing that you wanted to accomplish in your life.
Yeah. I mean, it creates like a lot of resentment. And that's interesting, because that could be a reason why there's a disconnect between the two generations, the older generation and the newer one. Because, you know, I even kind of fall into that. I want to know why. Like, why are we doing certain things? I look at some of these, you know, and now that I have little kids, I kind of realize, like, oh, here's why my dad was so pissed off all the time. And here's why adults are pissed, because they're working their ass off. And then you come home and you're like flipping out. So like I understand it now, and there is a disconnect there where I think the younger generation isn't fully appreciating what the older generation has put in. But there's also that view of looking at somebody who's done something for 30, 40 years. And it's like, do they actually seem happy? Is that what they wanted to do? And I think people are going to want to know that why. So it's interesting that you took that approach. And also too, to that point, the giving somebody the ability to tie what they do to taking care of a customer it's pretty valuable. It's like it's a genuine motivating force. Obviously, if somebody you bring them on, they don't care about your customers, they're probably not going to last very long, especially right. at like a smaller business where, you know, you own it. Like it's your money. You see the bank accounts, you're monitoring the cash flow. Like it's the customer, and that's who we're working for. Versus when you get to some of these bigger companies and, you know, sometimes like there's, you know, private equity or things get bought out, then the customer sometimes becomes the board. And then like a level of apathy can set in where it actually does get harder to convey to people, we need to take care of the customer, and that's the why. Sometimes that why doesn't exist. You know?
There's a story I heard a while back, and I don't know if I read it in a book or somebody told me, or if I heard it at a speech, but there's a guy at NASA, and he was kind of walking around. You know, they had just gone to the moon, and whether you believe that we went to the moon or not, that's like, it's just a story. All right. So, the guy was walking around and doing interviews with people and all this stuff. And just kind of like in awe of how amazing it was at NASA. And there was a janitor sitting there mopping the floor, and he was mopping the floor. And, this guy walked up to him and he's like, "What do you do here?" He's like, "I put people on the moon. That's what I do. I keep these floors clean so that people can walk around here and do business." He understood the why behind him mopping the floors and doing what he had to do. And so if you can get your whole team and build that culture of why you do this, that's I believe, key to building an organization that really moves and drives whether the economy is up or down. You build a team that will create momentum no matter what. And so that's really the main basis of why I do it like that, because our cultures drive our income, and our customers drive our income. And so if we're not treating our customers right and they go somewhere else, man, shame on us, you know?
And so let's dive into the resilience piece, because you've got an acronym, it's FLIGHT. So can we dive into that piece? Cause I think it ties into what we're talking about here.
Yeah, man, resilience is something that you need, especially as an entrepreneur. And I've been in the entrepreneur space for now 10 years. I've had 4 failed businesses, right? And so over the course of 3 or 4 years, I had a woodworking shop, and I had a courier business and a couple other things that, you know, I was just trying to figure something out.
I know exactly where you're at, dude.
Yeah, so
I've been there before. So
if you don't have resilience in the entrepreneur space, you definitely will not be able to make it, because it's a tough field, man. You know my story from last year. We talked about that in depth, and I think that if I didn't have a certain amount of resilience and grit, then I probably wouldn't be here today. I'd probably be finding another job or something like that. Let's go through that, man. Resilience is one of the key factors that you need in life to build yourself. It helps build self-confidence. It creates a space where you can move forward no matter what. And that's basically what resilience is in the first place. And so, yeah, the acronym FLIGHT, F is for focus. You've got to learn how to focus. You got to really be able to focus in on what you're doing and where you want to go. And focus is kind of like the other thing we talked about. It's like a muscle, right? You've got to work on it. The way that I learn to focus is I lock in on either meditation or something like that. And practicing meditation is a pain in the butt. You know, trying to get 30 seconds of a clear head is really difficult, especially in the beginning. But training yourself to focus And I can tell you how I learned how to meditate. And now I meditate completely different, but it was a way that helped me out tremendously. Was I just focused on the air around me, going in through my lungs, down into my body, and then cycle back out. And literally, I'm just learning how to focus on one thing. But the way that helps you in the long run is you are able to hyper-focus on task at hand.
Yeah, especially when you don't want to. It's good to practice on something that's don't take it this way, but it's like something that's not critical. Well, breathing is critical, obviously, but like being able to just listen to breathing and it going in and out and all that stuff, like being able to focus on it. It's like you said, it's a muscle that translates in those moments where you're sitting there and you're probably on the ramp and it's 5:30 and you just want to go home, but you know this aircraft's got to go out. And I don't want to read these freaking technical manuals and I just got to suck it up. Let me read through this. Let me get this done and button this up. And it's like, though, that's where I found those small moments of like practicing the focus help get you over that hump. Obviously, I've never worked on an aircraft, but like, that's how I'd imagine it shows up.
Well, it goes the same in everything.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a stack of paperwork in front of you that you've got to knock out that's like, oh my God, why do I have to do all this crap? Yeah. Right? You know, you've got invoices that you've got to put out. You know, you've got kids that you've got to be fully
present
with, you know. So practicing that focus for me was just starting out with the breathing and watching, you know, focusing on that path of the air. Inevitably, it started to translate into other sections of my life, you know, because I had been practicing how to focus on that breathing. Now, when I go to do emails or deal with my customers, I can hyper-focus on that task until it's complete. You know, when I'm building systems out and procedures for my company, boring stuff, you know what I'm saying? Like, dude, I just made an emergency response program for my company last week. And it took us, 4 hours to build it out. But we were able to hyper-focus on that. And the only reason that I'm able to do that type of stuff is because I practice focus on my own in my meditation, right? So yeah, focus is a key to resilience. Secondly is learning. Always be learning is one of my friend's core values. I love it, and we're probably going to steal it for my company because you have to be able to adapt and learn. No matter what, something that I say all the time on my show and, to the guys that are here is fail forward. You know, you're always going to run into a problem. You're always going to have a problem where, you know, it feels like you failed in an objective, but can you learn something from that? Can you take something from that and maybe make a small adjustment and continue to learn? So learning is not only like learning like that, but also being in, you know, getting into your tech pubs or getting into your, you know, doing some research on your industry, doing some self-development, reading books that have to do with bettering yourself as an individual. That's what I'm talking about when I'm speaking about learning, really digging into that.
I mean, that makes sense because one thing I've noticed too is when, you know, I've felt it personally and I feel like, you know, when I'm talking with friends and stuff like that to try to help them through tough times, a lot of times what you end up doing to yourself that drives you down like a road of either depression or you're really anxious or you're not sure how to move forward, or, you know, it seems like that failure, instead of it being that situation was a failure, you start to internalize that and think like, oh, I'm a failure. One of the things that's actually really helpful is, learning new stuff, because you get to see that the world is actually bigger than you think. Your problems probably aren't as big as you think, and there are probably solutions and paths forward. Whereas when you start to get in that kind of spiral that makes it hard to be resilient, a lot of times it's because you're just focusing on this really small, like you're focusing on yourself and like you think that there's no real opportunity. So learning is like a nice way to continually learning, always reminds you like, okay, these walls don't fully exist. There's pathways forward. I can get through this. So, all right, that rings true. So where does the, what's I?
I is improvise.
All right. I can definitely do that one. I like that one.
Yeah. So, I mean, sometimes you just don't know what to do. You just got to figure it out. Be resourceful for yourself. there's plenty of times where, dude, being an entrepreneur, you've got to make, for me, I've got to make my schedule every day. I've got to figure out what to do. I think 3 days ago, I was like, what the hell do I do today? You know what I'm saying? Like, I have no clue what to do. And my friend, I called my friend, he's a business owner. And we started talking about it because I was like, dude, what do you do when you don't know what to do for the day? He's like, man, I run into this all the time. And so we're whiteboarders, right? We got a whiteboard. I'll show you mine. I don't know if this is going to be on the tube, but, you know, I whiteboard stuff. All right. And I just take it and I do a brain dump on there.
Okay.
And off of that brain dump, ideas come, things happen. I'm able to say, hey, well, let's move forward with this, create a list out of that dump. And now I have stuff to do. Right. So you just got to kind of like, you might not know exactly what to do, but you've got to be able to improvise in order, like that's a key element of being resilient is for not sure. getting stuck, you know, because there's a barrier in front of you. Is there a way around it? Is there a way under it? Is there a way over it? You got to figure that out.
Well, that's a mindset in itself, right? Like having that in your back pocket, because, you know, I talk with customers all the time and a lot of times, you know, it's positive going in, but there's plenty of times where somebody's pissed off or something's broken or something's wrong. And like, hey, I'll go in prepared. Obviously you want to be prepared, but if you just sit there and try to think through every single situation, you're going to be just paralyzed. So it's having that. That's a mindset thing for sure.
Yeah.
Knowing that you can improvise and roll with it. All right. So what's G?
Oh, okay. We'll move on.
No. All right. What were you going to say? And then we can go into
it. Helps with that. What you were talking about just a couple minutes ago with anxiety. A lot of times, I know me personally, when I'm anxious, it's because I'm not doing something. There's something that needs to get done that it's not happening. You know, I was anxious about myself, my body when I was 350 pounds, right? I was anxious about it because I knew I needed to be going to the gym or eating healthier, you know, and I was anxious about possibly having a heart attack or whatever. And so like, in order for me to cure that anxiety, I got to get up and do something, right? You got to get up and improvise. And I didn't know how to lose weight, you know, so I did a little bit of learning, did a little bit of reading on it. And, you know, I've lost 100 pounds, right? And so we are, you know, I'm not so anxious about it anymore. I'm still like hard on myself, but that's my own personal problem. But
yeah, congrats, dude. And now you're hitting the gym twice a day. It's like a complete 180.
It's like a freaking maniac. it's not cool, but you know, I got to do what I got to do. Right. So yeah, we'll move on to G though. G for me, there's two G's. One is grit. And the other is gratitude. First is grit. And grit is the difference between those who succeed and those who don't. It's finding that determination to, you know, get through a problem, whether it really sucks or not. You gotta find something to dig for and fight for. And sometimes you don't have anything and you just got to keep on moving forward through that. Not exactly, the best or greatest time of your life, you know, having to find some type of grit and find that drive within you. But yeah, grit is definitely key. It's perseverance, determination, you know, figuring out how to like digging down deep and understanding that this is really what you want and pulling power and strength from that and just continue to move forward. No matter what your friends are saying, no matter what these other people are saying or what your thoughts are, on it, because we can get into a place in our head where we imagine the brain and the psyche is pretty amazing to me because it takes us to the worst case scenario for everything. Right. And so like you can sit here and think about stuff over and over and over again and think out what's going to happen is your mind just takes you to the worst place possible. What's the worst outcome possible. And so being able to dig down, cut all that silent, like silence, all that crap, using focus,
right? Yep.
And getting back into your own, like, I know I can do this. You know what I'm saying? I know that this is what I'm supposed to be doing and finding that grit and moving forward. is key to resilience. It's one of them.
Interesting. Sure. It's cool how these are tying together. and so the other one is gratitude.
Gratitude is key as well for me. And I think for a lot of people, my coaches and, you know, my friends and the books that I read, all this stuff talks about trying to be grateful, or not even trying to be grateful, but being grateful for what you have today. Because I don't know, we've had so many issues growing this company, that sometimes I'm like, why? You know, like, but then I got to remember 5 years ago, I was praying and begging and hoping and wishing to be where I am today. And so taking a little bit of time to reflect and be grateful for what I do have, and be grateful for my team, be grateful for the customers that we have, grateful that my kids aren't sick, you know, and that we have a roof over our heads, and me and my wife have a great relationship. Looking at these small things in my life and creating a space where I am grateful helps me find other things to be grateful for. It's a subconscious approach, right? And so one of the things that I try to do on a daily basis, and this is out of the G Code by a guy named Ryan Stueman. One of his G's is gratitude. And we start the day with gratitude on his book. So every day I wake up and I try to find five things to be grateful for. And it's like, it could be something stupid. Like, man, I'm grateful that my pillow is soft. You know, it doesn't have to be super in depth. After a while, it does become an in-depth thing because you're really thinking about things you want to be grateful for. And I'm grateful for a lot of the same stuff every day, in all honesty. But what it does is it primes my subconscious. You know, when you want to buy a car, you're like, oh, I want a white sedan. Well, guess what? While you're driving around, you see hundreds and thousands of white sedans everywhere. It's because you're thinking about it. Now your subconscious is saying, hey, there's one there. And hey, there's one there. And hey, there's one there. Well, the same thing works with negativity and gratitude. If you are in a negative space, your mind and your subconscious starts to put out, you should be pissed off about that. You should be upset about that. But when you start your day with gratitude, for me, it primes my subconscious. And so when I'm out doing things, my mind is pointing out, man, that's something to be grateful for. You should be happy about that. Look how awesome that is. And so it's a mindset thing that you've got to find, that you've got to create for your space, or for yourself. And being grateful is literally, you could be 50-50. You know, you could be negative all the time, or you can be grateful and happy about things happening. Doesn't mean that life is great. Doesn't mean that everything is going your way. Yep. But when you prime your subconscious in that way, it starts to point stuff out to you like, hey man, life's not that bad, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I can second everything that you just said. And the funny part about it is it probably didn't fully click until I had my first kid, and now I've got two. They're still pretty little, but you know, finding that time to be grateful is hugely helpful. Especially because my default in the past was to be pretty cynical, and all these things around gratitude, I was like, this is lame. This is stupid. These people are in denial. This is, you know, X, Y, Z. But then the more I go out into the world and deal with all the, just kind of the bullshit that's going to hit you regardless of what you're doing, it's a solid default, to go back to, because it primes you again with like focus, improvising, kind of lets you stay on track of what the goal is that you're trying to do, how you can find solutions to it, how you can help people, be thankful for what you got, not complaining about what you don't. Doesn't mean that you need to just be like, oh, my life is terrible and I just should be happy about that. It's not what that means, but it's like appreciating what you got so that you can move forward. All right. Sure. So what's H?
H is heal. You got to take some time to heal from your failures, and you got to take time to heal from the hurt that you've got from the past in your life, or what's happening today, or maybe something happened with a friend and it was an issue. Maybe you actually hurt yourself. But you know, healing is an important part of life. you've got to take some time, reflect on the issues at hand, and be able to forgive yourself for past failures and past issues that have happened. Forgive others for talking crap on you, you know, and for what they've done to you, and move forward. That doesn't necessarily mean that you forgive and forget all the time. You know, we're human. It's impossible. Yeah. You know, like I've forgiven a lot of people, and I've forgiven myself for a massive amount of failure that I've had in my life. But I think that healing is a way that you can really start to reflect on yourself and find ways to get better, in resilience. I think healing is quite important.
Yeah. Probably not paid that much attention to, I imagine. I know that's probably the toughest one out of all these for me. And what's T?
T is thrive.
All right.
So we're getting past everything we've talked about. We've talked about focus, learning, improvising, grit and gratitude, healing, and then thriving. And we want to thrive in life. We don't just want to skate by, you know, we don't just want to run through the operations and all this stuff and just kind of barely skate by. We want to be able to thrive, above and beyond, you know, go above and beyond in everything that you do. Try your best. I don't do it, you know, like all the time. Like I said, we're all human. We all struggle with it, but to thrive, you've got to set high and ambitious goals. Jim Collins calls it the BHAG, the big, hairy, audacious goals, right? Set those goals. Because most likely if you set a goal, if you're aiming at a target, you might not hit the target, but you might hit close, right?
Yeah.
Develop a growth mindset, continuously improve, surround yourself with positive influences, and celebrate your successes. That's flight in a nutshell. Still working on that whole piece there.
But you're going to do a presentation on this?
Yeah, for sure. And so we'll kind of dig into it even more as that goes on. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Well, yeah, I mean, all this stuff rings true, and it's the everything leading up to Thrive is like all the kind of precursors to that. And so, all right. So I guess the question is, for a technician, for somebody that's starting their own business in aviation, how does this relate to them?
Bro, starting a business at all, period, doing anything, side hustle or not, you've got to have resilience, man. You've got to have grit. You've got to be continuously learning. You've got to know how to improvise. You got to be grateful for what you got and grateful for what you're going after. And you've got to learn how to thrive, man. You've got to try your best to thrive. This is the hardest thing I've ever done, man. I've been to combat twice. I lived in Afghanistan for 3 years as a civilian. I've been through multiple freaking huge issues in my personal life. I've got 3 kids, been married and divorced. All this stuff happens in life. You've got to be able to bounce back. You've got to be able to figure out where you're at, what you're doing, what's your goal, and move to it. And so if you're going to start a business, believe me. Can I cuss on here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Shit ain't easy, man.
Yeah.
I can promise you that. This stuff is tough, man. You got to have thick skin. You've got to be able to deal with irate customers. You've got to be able to deal with people who don't believe in your dream, people that don't care. And why should they? You haven't done anything yet, right? But you've got to have resilience to be able to overcome what's happening in your life today and what the outcome looks like today. You've got to be able to push forward and get through that. And that's why resilience is so important. If you're going to be successful, this is like one of the key factors in your life that you need. You need to be resilient in every aspect of your life.
Hell yeah, man. Agreed. Well, all right. So before we wrap up, I want to talk about Hire Vets.
Okay.
And the Flight Level Zero podcast, what you're doing over there.
All right. What do you want to know, man? Let's talk about Hire Vets. We'll get into
it. What is it?
Hire Vets is a nonprofit that I founded. And we are currently building out the organization. But Hire Vets is our mission at Hire Vets is to help veterans transition out of the military into civilian life. Right now, looking at the stats, 48% of veterans quit their first job within the first year. And then a staggering 83% of veterans quit their first job within the second year. There is an epidemic of homelessness among veterans. There is an epidemic of PTSD, people having issues just reacclimating or acclimating at all to a civilian life. And so the main mission and the main goal of Hire Vets is to create a community where these people are heard, where they are part of a group of people that are getting out of the military, moving into civilian life. And we're going to help them not just find jobs, because I feel like getting out of the military, finding a job is not as difficult. You have some good experience. You have leadership experience. You have, people like that. You know, you show up on time, you know, that type of stuff. The real hard part is living a different type of life. You don't have those rules and regulations to kind of guide you anymore. You don't necessarily know how to go even shop for yourself because you've been eating at the chow hall for your entire existence. There's a lot of stuff. You don't know how to treat people because in the Army, I'm an Army guy. I don't know how it is in other branches, but I'm pretty sure the Marines are a lot tougher and the Air Force is not, right? So they've got these different branches and different ways that they approach hardship. There's different ways that they approach learning. You know, in my battalion, it was like, if you messed up, you just got yelled at and cussed out and drugged through the mud until it got done right. You can't do that in the civilian sector. And so teaching etiquette and stuff like that is important. So right now we are actually working with a company that is going to do, then we're developing a 6-month training program in a couple different assets of life. And so we're going to be teaching financial literacy, leadership development, career development, etiquette, and possibly faith right now. And so we're looking into those 5 areas to do a 6-month training program, and we're looking to get accredited so that our sponsors and the people that know about us, when they complete that 6-month program, they'll have something to put on their resume and on their certificate. They'll have a certificate to present. And then after that, now you're in the community of individuals, and that creates space for mentorship, friendship, and networking. And hopefully, like right now, our main thing is we're putting guys into biz av. We're trying to put people into biz av. We're trying to, obviously we have a shortage on many fronts in business aviation. So right now we're focusing on biz av and bringing guys out of the aviation industry in the military and helping them transfer into business aviation. But eventually my goal is to have a way to integrate this into many other industries.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good place to start. I mean, it's needed. There's a lot of transferable skills, mindsets. There's a lot of people, military veterans in aviation already today. So I'd imagine that's even got to make things a little bit easier for that transition. Well, yeah. Dude, so like what was it like when you came back, and did that like inform you wanting to start this or being able to have like a better understanding of what people are going through? Like how did this all come about?
All right. So we'll hop into that. When I got out, I didn't really have a difficult transition. I found a job right away, did really good, but I had a really good friend of mine. His name was Pat, and Pat got out and had the exact opposite experience. Pat was one of my best friends. He was my roommate for 4 years. And Pat was in and out of homeless shelters up in Philly, for 3-4 years, maybe even more than that. And we had talked quite a bit while he was kind of jumping in and out. And especially when he was doing good, he would call me, but when he wasn't doing good, he would not. Yeah. And so I lost contact with him for about 2 years. And then he called me, and he was in a homeless shelter, got a job, and he was kind of like figuring his life out. And about 2 months later on his birthday, he OD'd in a house. Dude, it's probably one of the worst days of my life, in all honesty. So I sobbed about that and thought about that and really have been for the last couple of years, like, how do I help veterans that are going through this? How do we help veterans and catch them before they get to this point? And so it's been something that's really been on my heart, to start and figure out where I can get these guys support they need, on that transition. And I think that, you know, you lose community, first of all. All my friends are all over the U.S. My friends are in Texas. My friends are in New York. My friends are in California. None of them are close to me. You know, these are people that I grew up with. I became a man working with these dudes, and they became men too. Right. And the women are the same, right? They became women in this field. And so when you lose that group and that community and that structure, that's a big hit to you mentally.
Yeah.
And I think that some people just don't know how to get out of it. And so I'm trying to create here is a program where people can stand up and live their own life and be successful, civilian and be a contributing factor to society. And so, F3 is another nonprofit, and I love their slogan. It's leave no man behind and leave no man where you found him. And so that's something that really has been on my mind and on my heart and on my soul for literally at least 5 years. I started JP Arrow to fund that. That was my goal with this company. My goal with JP Arrow was literally to start funding a nonprofit to help veterans on that transition. And so we're finally getting to that point. And the aspects and goals of JP Arrow have kind of morphed into something else, but now I've got an executive board. We've got an executive table. We've got a CFO, a CMO, CPO. I'm the CEO. We've got a board of advisors, and we've got some great affiliates that we're working with to build out this program. And so this year, our goal is to just get set the hell up and get everything kind of organized and in place. And next year, the goal is to have one or two events and help 10 veterans. It costs about $7,500 to $10,000 to help a veteran. So we're going to be putting out fundraising to raise about $75,000 to $100,000 to help veterans. And then whatever our other operating costs are for the organization. So that's the goal for this year. Like I said, it's just to get everything stood up, understand what we're doing, and get everything in line so that when we do hit the ground running, we are able to actually run, you know?
Yeah, man. Well, maybe we'll when we do part two, let's dive into some of that stuff that you guys are working on and where you guys are heading. Yeah, because I'd be curious to see how that stuff goes at the beginning, what you guys run into, because it's never going to be perfect from the jump. It's always going to be continual improvement, like you said. And and actually, after we get off here, I'll send you a couple podcasts I've been listening to lately that are talking about some of like the homeless epidemic and some of the different ways that people are tackling that. Curious to see, you know, what the overlaps are. And looking at everything you've put together with Flight, I mean, it makes sense that would be at the core of a lot of what you're talking about. So yeah. This is cool, man.
Thanks, man. I'm really glad that it's actually happening.
Yeah.
I got a really big push last year from a good friend of mine in November. And now we're like, holy crap, we got stuff happening. And
this is real.
Yeah, it's real. It's effective. You know, we're figuring out the 501(c) or C3 stuff, and it's a whole different ball game. I don't know how to run a nonprofit. You know what I'm saying? I'm just figuring it out. You know, so
you'll improvise.
Yeah, we'll improvise and get through it. You know, but luckily I have some really awesome people that are within the organization, and I have some really great people that I look up to that are helping me. And so, you know, they're just kind of guiding me. And I didn't learn all this stuff that we were talking about, customer service and customer satisfaction and all this stuff myself. You know, I learned it through books and I learned it through mentors, you know, and it sat with well with me. Right. And so that's the only reason I do it the way that I do it. But I don't think I would have, it would have taken me years to figure that out, you know? So I put myself in circles around with people that inspire me and this is how they operate. And I'm like, well, if that's how they operate, then I'm going to operate just like that. You know, we're going to make stuff happen. So
that's awesome, man. Yeah, so before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to touch on?
No, man, not really. We were talking about Flight Level Zero for a little bit. And really, that's just like one of my passions. I love being on shows. I love doing the podcast, bringing on individuals like yourself and all these other people that I've had on the show and talk, kind of just talk story, get what they've got going on in life and maybe learn a couple lessons from their past and dig into that. You know, it's really a self-development podcast. We talk about aviation, but it's really more so geared on developing yourself to be an outstanding individual. And then I think the rest kind of just falls into life after that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for yeah. sure.
We have so a sprinkle of aviation in there.
Yeah. Got to sprinkle it in.
Yeah.
Where can people get in touch with you?
On LinkedIn, you can find me on LinkedIn at, I think it's Joe Peebles. I'll make sure I give you all the notes for the show notes. And then
I'll throw your LinkedIn profile link in there.
Yeah. You know, I do a lot less professional stuff on Instagram. That's Joe Peebles as well. You can find me there. You can find our company, JP Aero, on those. And we just kind of like do fun little videos about working on airplanes and my trucks, driving around doing dumb stuff. And so that's really it. Facebook. I'm not on Facebook much. I'm not on many other things. But if you guys ever need to email me, my email is joe@jpaerotechnics.com. You can always email me if you want to get in contact with me for anything. And man, my doors are open. If you have questions, you just want to learn about the industry, maybe you're looking for a job, maybe this isn't the place for you, but you're looking for people. I open my network to anybody who comes over, you know. So, you know, I'm an open book as far as running a business and all this other stuff. So I think, yeah, me and you talked a couple times back and forth about stuff in the past, but
I can attest to your openness on this stuff and like willingness to share and help. It, like when we talked last year, that was I didn't expect you to share that much, and it was like exactly the info that I needed at that point in my life. So very much appreciated, dude.
Absolutely, man. I'm here for you, bro. If you ever need it. So
cool. Well, thanks everybody. Have a good one.